Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, breaking a habit is difficult, but don't worry, lads, because Fume may just have the answer for us. Because not everything in a habit is bad, so instead of making drastic, uncomfortable changes, why not just remove the bad from the habit? Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device that takes the bad from the habit. Instead of vapor, it uses flavored air. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. Instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors. Like I just told you, well, you're not listening. That's because of the bad habits you're in. Sharpen up. That's all I'm saying. Use Fume. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting. This actually gives you a lot to do with your fingers and it's helpful for like de-stressing, anxiety and just keeping your hands busy and avoiding breaking the habit. Now the flavors are fantastic. They come with lots of different options, so there'll be something for everyone. My favorite lately has been the orange vanilla flavor. You literally just pop the cartridge in your Fume and away you go. Fume sent me the Journey Pack, which is the ideal option to break your habit. And if you want to get that, all you've got to do is go to tryfume.com, that's tryfume.com/true, and use my code true, and that'll get you 10% off at checkout, which will make starting the good habit that little bit easier. So good luck to all of you lot who want to make that positive change in your life and try Fume, and thanks to them for 10% off when you use my code true. Right, welcome back to the True Geordie podcast. Today's guest is the 7-time Mr. Olympia, Phil Heath. Thanks for coming, mate.
No, thanks for having me. This set is freaking beautiful. This is outstanding.
Thank you very much, mate. And it means a lot.
And your wall of greatness.
Yeah, you're going to be on there next. Hopefully, I get some signed off here.
Oh, yeah. I gotta send you something special after seeing all this. Oh, I got to figure something out for you.
Cool, man.
Yeah. Because I'm a competitive dude, so I'm looking at, yeah, he's got all these weight belts and, you know, yeah, the championship belts and the gloves. I'm like, what could I, maybe a dumbbell or something. I don't know.
Yeah, you belong on there, man. I watched your career. My dad was an amateur bodybuilder. I grew up being told about Haney and Dorian Yates, obviously Arnold. So then when I found bodybuilding, I was like, okay, let me learn from these guys. I was watching you, Jay, Kai, and that to me was the last great era of bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just not quite the same anymore. And I actually think you weren't appreciated, mate. Mm. You know, like, and even by me, because I remember like watching you being like, this guy's unstoppable. Like,
and you're like, fuck this guy.
No, not quite as bad.
No, but I mean,
like, but it was I like Kai and I felt like, oh, the poor little underdog, when's he going to get one? And and it was a hell of a storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bit like WWE, right? Like, there was a storyline.
Yes.
And it made me care.
Mm-hmm.
And now I don't care as much because you were like the Triple H. You know, we needed that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
without you, I now realize, like, it's just not the same, man.
Yeah.
You think you've heard that a bit?
And I've heard that quite a bit now because it's been going on 4 years of me not competing. And yeah, it does feel different, you know, going to expos and then having fans come up and say, you know, I didn't really like you, but I respect the hell out of what you created. And then also, you know, you and Kai, man, it just, like you said, we made people care. And it was because we cared. We cared so much about being number one that we didn't like each other. Mm. Why would you like someone that's like nipping at your heels? And why would he like me for being the guy that's in his way of achieving what he always dreamed about? What he sacrificed everything for? I mean, we all know his story, you know, being an orphan in Brooklyn and going through all these trials and tribulations. And then you have this guy that comes out of nowhere from a basketball background of crying out loud and just, phew, and then, you know, but I will say, Kai and I had, you know, some early battles that people may not remember. He beat me at the Arnold Classic in 2010 because he had won the previous year in 2009 and looked phenomenal. And I didn't compete at that particular show. So in 2009, he won the Arnold. I got sick at that year's Olympia. So he placed one slot ahead of me that year. And then that following year, we both did the Arnold Classic. And then he repeated as champion. And I was not happy with that because you know, I wanted that Arnold Classic. And I made sure after that show, I said, look, I was up by 3 points after prejudging, and then I lost by 7 at night. I was like, I've never understood, like, how could I lose this type of event?
That's really confusing to me, how it changes.
Yeah,
so much.
Like, I just didn't understand. And, you know, instead of like bitching and moaning and going up to a judge and saying, what could I do? I was like, well, I know what I need to do. And that's just become so great that he'll never stand a chance. And, you know, it was very difficult holding him off, but I enjoyed every minute of it, every rep of it. And, you know, standing in his way was something that, you know, I take great pride with, because I know his body of work. I know how hard he trains. Mm-hmm. I know how hard this guy didn't cheat on a diet. We all watched his, you know, story. I watched it. So to know that we both cared so much made the audience care. I mean, there would be Team Kai, Team Phil at the Olympia, and there's been some like almost scraps.
I know,
like,
right?
At the expo, I've heard some stories, man. So it's, but yeah, today's, it's just different, man. Is I think we're going through this transition where, because of maybe some other divisions, yeah. Some of the fans in open are like, oh, well, we like these categories. And then the open class guys are kind of just lacking maybe that fire. And I don't know if it's because of social media. I don't know how you feel about that. Like, social media maybe making it more just like, oh, let's be all be friends and let's just work the algorithm and make some money, you know?
I feel like the standard setter isn't there. That's mm-hmm. the problem, is we always had a passing of the torch from, I think it was Haney to Yates, the Yates, you know, Ronnie to Jay, Jay to you.
Yeah.
And when that torch was passed, we were like, that's the guy.
Yeah.
And the standard was set, and the level of competition, because you had a competitiveness in you, mm-hmm. for example, to not let that standard slip.
Yep.
It felt like you were uncatchable, which made everyone go, oh, well, I have to come in unbelievable then.
Right.
Whereas because champions change every year now, because there isn't someone who really holds the bodybuilding standard to such a level, what are we searching for? What are we chasing here?
Yeah. It's quite disappointing in that aspect. But I think life is like a circle. When we look at Arnold's career, when he had retired the first time, how many champions were there in between? You know, there's a few. And then he came back and won again in 80. I think we're kind of going through that right now. That
I want to ask a question, because I don't know if it's just the way it feels. Mm-hmm. But it feels like for decades,
mm-hmm.
yes, bodybuilding, yeah, there was, you know, there was steroids and all of this, right? And then, yep. But the point was, is the work, the dedication mm-hmm. was first and foremost.
Correct.
And it feels like a lot of people are a bit lazier, a bit more like, I don't think that they understand that.
No.
I feel like they're just leaning on the drugs or whatever.
It's hard for me to even admit this for a lot of the guys, because I don't want them to take this the wrong way, but I believe you're pretty spot on with this. Mm. We don't see it in the eyes. We don't see it in their soul.
Mm.
You know, people can sing, but when someone sang that song, you know, when someone is, you know, I believe just because of YouTube, because of social media, like, we're saying things just to get a click. It's tough, man. I always pose this challenge to people. Would you be as intense if no cameras were on? If someone just happened to see you training, with there not being a camera in sight for 6 months, would you still have that desire?
Like the shadow Dorian Yates attitude. No one got to see him.
Right.
Until he typed one step on two.
Didn't care.
Now and, social media.
And I get it. There's that part, which I did exhibit as well, because I was still in that social media. You know, I was at the beginning, right? But I was willing to do that work up until 2020 with no cameras in it, just me and the weights, and even my wife being there at the same time. We weren't in there filming all night. And yeah, maybe that came at a detriment to say, yeah, you know, that would have been great content during the prime years of your career. I still have the pictures. I still have some videos that I haven't released, but I have the titles to prove that I did the work. And I do believe that, yes, you're trying to build the following. The sponsors as well, like, they only pay attention to the numbers, not the titles anymore. And I think that's what changed it. So I can't blame a competitive bodybuilder. See, they're at a crossroad where, am I an influencer or competitive bodybuilder? And they have a difficult time. Like,
it feels like the sporting yeah. element is decreasing
because
and
of
the
that.
Show off and the social yeah. media is increasing.
Right. Because I could tell you right now, if someone came to me and said, Phil, like, I really believe I can be Mr. Olympia, I'd say, okay, film as much content as you want for one entire month and then come see me. Because for the next 3 months, it's going to be hell. But I could promise you that you're going to be way better than what you were.
Yeah.
I could promise you.
I don't think people realize the standard. Like, I mean, I went to train with Dorian in 2012.
Oh, yeah?
And it was this idea I had, like, I just want to find out what it's like, right? And I thought I was training hard. Right?
and
I was, like, one of the toughest trainers in my gym.
Yeah.
So I go in there, and I'm like, right, let's see what... And I went back workout with Dorian, right? So Dorian...
You started off with back
workout. Yeah, in you know, in the dungeon,
in
right?
the dungeon.
So I'm like, I'm really, really wet behind the ears, clearly, because... The first machine was over and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I am fucked.
Yeah, you're getting
I ain't got
wrecked.
Nothing left yet.
Right.
And that was when like, and Dorian's like, now the real work begins, boy.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh shit. So I go back to my gym and I'm like, we're not even training hard, mate. We don't even know what hard training is.
Correct.
We are so delusional.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I don't think anyone who, until they get in a session with someone like yourself mm-hmm. has any comprehension of. And that's why, you're a fucking demon, mate. I know that.
Yeah.
But other people don't understand. They see the muscles, the cartoonish, like muscular.
Right.
They don't understand the work that goes into it. And do you know what? I watched your documentary last night and it was so great, right?
Thank you.
And I say that as just a fan of documentaries anyway, not even the bodybuilding thing. I think everyone can enjoy this.
Mm-hmm.
But why it was great for me was you were unstoppable in my eyes. You weren't mm-hmm. even, you didn't really have much of a human feel to you in terms of vulnerability.
Right.
But to then go back and go, oh shit, he was really going through a lot the whole time.
Yeah.
And he was just so fucking strong
yes.
that he could overcome that and then outwardly project, I'm indestructible. Because you're not showing any weakness to everyone in the competition,
right.
but you're holding it in. And now we got to see that. And I really appreciated you showing that.
No, I'm so glad that you watched it. And thank you for all those kind words. I mean, and you're absolutely right. You're so spot on with this. I mean, everybody goes through pain. Everyone goes through it. But when you realize what your calling is, there's no time for it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no time for the woe me and, oh man, like I have a job to do. I have to suppress this for right now because I see what's going on. I have an opportunity to be the best in the world, if not the best ever. And it's going to require me to put some things to the side until I can deal with them. The problem is that they do end up growing.
The demons.
The demons, man.
That's what I felt about you.
It's like,
them demons were there from early.
Yeah.
And they kind of helped you.
Yeah.
But eventually they come back out.
They come back out. And we see it in other athletes as well.
For sure.
Like I remember watching Mike Tyson talk about the demons and stuff. And I'm sitting there. It's like, yep, I know what that means. I'm just very glad that I was able to leverage it because I could hear those whispers from that damn freaking demon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got to kill these you got to get them. And you're like, I just want to chill. I just want to hang out. I just want to know what it feels like to have a summer to myself, to hang out with my friends and family. I just want to know what it feels like to go to a birthday party, a kid's party with my friends, hold them up and play. I want to know what it feels like going on a summer vacation. Not worrying about, you know, the macros and did I train or not. And I just want to know what it feels like to be still and be able to cry about something that has been bothering me for years. And that was unavailable to me. And I made it such a big deal that I just held it inside and said, you know what, now's not the time. Because if you allow that out right now, you may downward spiral and not be able to pull yourself back up to do this job. So a lot of men out there, especially men, yourself included, we all go through these pain points where life isn't fair when things happen and you suppress it. And then, you know, you have the blank stare. And then your wife is like, what's wrong, honey? And you're like, oh, nothing. Oh, nothing. When everything is wrong.
Everything is so true.
And you don't know the words. You don't have the emotional intelligence yet to communicate these feelings properly. It comes out in rage normally. Fuck, yeah, like, leave me alone it becomes so overwhelming where all you see is red sometimes, all you see is darkness sometimes. And for me, it took a long time, even most recent, to kind of get through it. And God bless my wife, man, because she could have easily left and just was like, you know what? Like, figure your shit out. Maybe I'll be around. Maybe I won't. But she was like, nope, you need to kill this ego. And I learned that I can't kill him. I don't need to kill this ego. I need to acknowledge him, because you know what that ego did? It got me through those workouts. It got me through that pain. It got me through those moments where, you know, like when my dad died and I still had to train and get ready for the show. It still happened when his wife, my stepmom, she died a couple years later. And I have a brother that is high functioning autistic living in Seattle. Now I got to provide more money to make sure he's okay and all these other things. And then you have the internet beating your ass every day. But then you're so fixated on that you can't acknowledge the fact that you have millions of people that love you and that you have one of the greatest physiques of all time. And then you have Sandals in your house. You're not thinking of any of this. You're not appreciating any of this. And then finally realizing that through loss, holy crap, I have all this stuff to uncover. And that's what Breaking Olympia really Breaking Olympia gave me an opportunity to be the most vulnerable Phil Heath ever. And that's what you're going to see. And you saw that. And I just want to say, thanks, man. It's almost like, I feel like I'm going to have a lot of brotherhood. I'm creating a brotherhood.
It feels like it.
Cause everyone I've talked to, especially males, like strong guys like yourself, and we have all these, first of all, we're highly intelligent.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
We go through life. We deal with the shit. We keep going. But then we wonder, are we by ourselves in this process? And it feels lonely as hell sometimes. And we have our moments, whether we want to cry about it, you know, by ourselves, or just be angry. It's one or the other. It's an emotion.
Oh, fuck.
You know, it's an emotion. But I'm so thankful that this got picked up. When I was introduced to this idea by Adam Scorgi and Brett Harvey, I was blown away, because it wasn't about, oh, how many ounces of protein and, you know, what's your cycle? What's this? What's that? It was like, no, this is like, who is Phil Heath? Like, who is he? And when they challenged me with that, I was like, you really want to know? And they're like, and we're going to pull it out of you. And then here I am taking a deep breath and I'm like, okay, it's going to get ugly. They're like, that's fine. We can talk about it all. We can pull all your pictures out from childhood, this, that, and the other. So it was very therapeutic. And my intention, along with theirs, was just to show that through my body of work, through my story, it's kind of channeling that connectivity between me and other males that are going through the same thing. Winning the Mr. Olympia is not relatable.
That's the vehicle for the story, but yeah, it's not the story.
Going through life is relatable.
Exactly.
Going through life. Yeah. And then saying, yep, I still got to go to work. The trash man still has to go to work when something bad happens. You know, the CEO, there's like, I got all these employees and stuff, and I still have to be strong in front of these people because I have a responsibility to take care of their families. They think it's because of me. It's because I got 30 people that rely on me. If I screw up, they have no insurance. They have no 401k. They have no investments. They have no Christmas. They have nothing. And yeah, it's just really cool that this was made and it got picked up by Universal. I mean, to have a studio release, it was, you know, it was a dream come true. And of course, having Danny Garcia and freaking Dwayne The Rock Johnson a part of it.
That was so cool.
I mean, I can't even complain. There's nothing I can complain about. Nah. Like, at all.
Honestly, like, when I was watching it, I wrote something down about, like, because everything you've said about how men will identify with this, I was literally looking at so many elements of my own life through you and going, there's a man here who doesn't really like himself, but on the other hand, has an ego and he doesn't want to be denied for what he can fucking achieve. So he's telling me, I don't really like myself, but I'm not like you fucking stop me from getting what I want out of life.
That's right.
And I'm coming for it and I'm going to find a way to become great. And one day I might learn to love myself through that.
Yeah.
And the question I had at the end of it was, do you love yourself now though?
Yes. Yeah.
That's great.
Finally.
That is great, man.
It was tough, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard. And, you know, it's something that just because you say, yes, I love myself, it's like, it's not over. Yeah. You have to repetitively say this. You have to look around and be in gratitude for everything and learn to breathe every day. Like, you get in such a fight or flight response and very robotic in your motions. Like, oh, get up, drink a shake, do this, do this, do this. It's like, how about you just like take a minute, maybe go outside, no matter where you're at, whether the sun is out or not, and just kind of be still for a minute.
It's hard to do for an active mind.
But how do you slow it down?
Mm-hmm.
The minute you can slow that process down where you don't hear anything, it's because you learn how to be still and you had to be in your body. But imagine if you're in your body, you're more conscious, you're more self-aware. Now you know who you are. Now you know, like, yeah, I'm not feeling really good today. But now you know how to put words to it because you're being still. But when you're being in like this fight or flight response, like you're very reactionary, you don't know how to respond to other things that may occur. And you should be able to respond versus react. You know, I know like in America, like, and I'm sure they say it around the world, you know, when crisis happens, they say we send out our first responders. We don't send out our first reactors.
Yeah.
Respond. People that know how to respond to life are ones that are equipped with a certain level of confidence through their body of work, but they also have to be calm. They have to be calm. Like if someone is ill, like an ER doctor has to be calm. They can't be like, you know, it doesn't work like that. They may give a direction to someone to get them what they need, but they have to be calm and being able to patch someone up or whatnot. So, you know, I have to, you know, increase the vibrational energy and the frequency, and then also be mindful of every day I have to thank my body for being here. Thank my body that I'm alive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, thank God that I still have this opportunity, because I know a lot of people need to be woken up and realize, like, have you even thanked your body for what you put it through? All the workouts, all the pain, all the BS, like all the stuff, like you should thank yourself. And that was one of the things that my wife, you know, would say to me. She's like, Phil, like you went through all this pain throughout your entire life. And not once have you just sat there and been like, man, this is dope.
Mm-hmm.
Like I made it this far.
I feel like your wife is such a huge part of the reason why you've overcome so much.
Oh yeah. I give her a ton of credit, because before her, oh man, I mean, it was just difficult. And I was married once before and it was just not the same. Mm-hmm. Clearly. I mean, people could see, I mean, people have told me, they're like, dude, like it's completely changed your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, absolutely. And I feel like this documentary with Breaking Olympia, a lot of women that support these strong males are going to be able to have their own community too. Because it is important that they are acknowledged, appreciated, and respected. But they need to know that they're not alone also. And they get to see my wife, you know, go through her battles with breast implant illness. She had 4 autoimmune issues, disorders, and, you know, gained 60 pounds from, you know, black mold in her implants. And all while I'm, you know, trying to be the best in the world. And then I'm telling her, like, I shouldn't go to the gym. I should just hang out with you. And she's like, Phil, like you can't even fix this. Like you need to go do your job. I'll still make you meals. I'm like, man, I feel like such an ass. Like she's like, no, this is what I signed up for too. Talk about unconditional love there. You know, that's why we're, you know, we're husband and wife, but like real, when someone says this is my partner, oh yeah, this is my ride or die, man. Like this is my mate.
Right when you here. Know that other person wants the absolute best for you and you can absolutely give yourself to them,
mm-hmm.
and they will catch you.
Yeah.
That's where that positivity that you're talking about, I feel, is just born from.
Yeah.
And going back into the story, the dark side that we've seen in you from mm-hmm. a young age, and you know, not necessarily a bad side, just a kid who grew up in difficult circumstances. You know, there were shootings and it was scary times, right? And you similarly to myself, which I connected on again, is the dark side in you put down to your father.
Yeah.
That aggressive, you know, competitiveness. And I wondered now, you know, you obviously your dad passed away, bless him, and you are now an older man yourself. Do you look at him differently now that you're grown and you can reflect on things and you can almost get to know him in a whole new way now?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I remember, so my parents divorced like when I was three. Mm-hmm. And you know, every kid wants his father around, and he was quite distant. And you know, you kind of have moments, even when my mother got remarried. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a great guy. You know, he treated me great. You know, he wasn't abusive or anything. If anything, he was very supportive of my mother, who was a working woman. Mm-hmm. You know, she had her own career, and he provided. He was very basic. Like, I provide, you do this, you have your chores. This, it was very systematic. And he was in the army and stuff like that, but he wasn't like a total drill sergeant. All he wanted me to do is just be smart and yeah. read and do those things. My dad didn't go to any games, no basketball games, no track events. I can't remember any of them. I think the one time he did go was that I can remember. He went to one track meet, and then I think he went to my state championship game. I think he did. I don't remember that. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, but you start to resent, you know, your father, because you're like, man, like, why weren't you there? What the hell is going on? And then you kind of learn later on that, wow, like, I share some similarities to this man. Maybe I should think about how his relationship with my mom was. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let me ask some questions from like an uncle or like a cousin and be like, hey, what were they like? Yeah. And they're like, your mom's kind of stubborn, dude. Like, you know, and I remember talking to one of my uncles, like my mom's brother. I'm like, he's like, yeah, your mom's something else sometimes. So just
understand,
like, just understand that she could press buttons too. So I'm like, ah, okay. You know, and it's not to point fingers or anything. It just realized that they had passion, but just, it couldn't go further. It just didn't work, you know? And, hell, I'm divorced too. So like, I get it. And yes, as you get older, you start to connect, but it'll be 10 years since my father passed later this month.
Mm. How are you feeling about that?
You know, I had the date like marked down, right? Like, oh, I should probably just, because I buried him in Arlington, Texas. That's around the area where he's from. And I thought, oh, I should fly out there, which is like in another week, just to do like a 10-year thing. And I was like, I don't have to go do that, but if I just wake up, my wife knows, like I could just wake up on the, I think it was the 29th. So like the 27th, I'll just pick up and leave, you know, and just go do it and come right back. But I keep a bodybuilding show in Texas because of him. You know, I don't live in Texas, but I keep it there because I feel like I'm connected, but I've always been connected to him since he's passed. Mm-hmm. You know, he was given pretty much 1 month to live. He pretty much made it about a year.
Tough
and,
dude.
And just a tough dude, man. I still remember, man, like, I'll tell you a quick story. Like, so, his wife, my stepmom, was like, hey, this is what's going on with your father. You know, he should be okay. This and that. And so I don't know if she's lying. I don't know, but I'm just thinking, well, she would tell me. So I said, well, let me know if it gets bad. So like about 6 weeks out from the Olympia, it gets bad. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh shit. You know, and there was no flights out, so I was like, I gotta figure out a way. So I found a way to get out there. He's not eating, not doing anything. He's just kind of like accepting it, right? So the doctor, you know, anyone that has gone through this, like the doctors try to, oh yeah, we're just trying to keep him comfortable, blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, I'm not trying to hear this shit right now. Like, you're talking about my damn dad, dude. Like, I think he's just being stubborn. I think he's just like not caring. I don't think it's because of the disease that he has. I think that he's still, you know, a superhero in my eyes. You know, I didn't have to grow up with him to know that I share the same DNA. Like, I'm like, fuck this, you know? So I'm like yelling at this doc, and I like get up in his face where I'm like, oh man, security's probably going to throw me. I'm probably going to get arrested, you know? Uh-huh. And I looked him in the eye and I said, he's a Heath. It's my father you're talking about. That's my last name. He's going to be all right. I'm going to go into this room and he and I are going to talk about this. So I go into the room and I was like, look, Pop, like, I love you. And we have just now started to really connect. And I get it. You're here, but you need to eat, man. What the hell is going on? He didn't really say much. You know, he was just like, oh, Phil, you know, they're just trying to talk about deflection. I was like, no, you need to eat, Pop. Like, what's going on? So I said, I'm going to come back here and it's, you know, I have to go compete And that's when he said, and my half brother, so same dad, different mom, Brandon, who's a freaking giant. He's like 6'9", 300 pounds. Like, whoa. Yeah. So I could tell you guys mom's genetics on that. So they left the room and it's just my dad and I. And he looks at me and he goes, remember that belt I whipped your ass with? And I was like, dad, you like used it once, you know? And he's like, yeah, I know. But you're going to take that same belt and whip their ass too. He's like, you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. I said, oh yeah. So I left and I was like, oh, these guys are so screwed now. It's like he gave me some energy and I felt like I gave him some energy back. But long of the short of it is I remember my mother was contacted by his wife, my stepmom. Uh-huh. And so my mom calls me up and I was like, what's going on? And she's like, your father's eating. I was like, how would you know? You know, because you don't have like direct contact with your ex-husband. She's like, no, they told me. And I said, he's been eating since when? She's like, since you left. So I was like, hell yeah. And it taught me that like,
that's so powerful.
You know, it's like he needed to know that his son loved him. He needed to know that I cared, that I didn't hold resentment. I didn't have that. So of course, you know, I won that show. And then that following year.
Before you move on from that.
Yeah.
How did that feel to win the show after your dad said that, man?
Well, yeah, I appreciate you mentioning and cutting me off because I missed a point. Yeah. There's a moment in Breaking Olympia where there's a video where my dad speaks. And now he was in that same hospital bed. Mm-hmm. And basically, without giving it away, is that he just shared his excitement for me winning. And
after he wasn't there at your earlier competitions when you were a basketball player,
right?
That must have felt like, yeah.
It felt amazing because, you know, when I became Mr. Olympia, I had flown him out for the shows. So he had seen me be on stage and he had seen me win a title. But to know that he gave me that added boost while me giving him a boost, it like brought us even closer. So obviously that following year he passed, but before that, you know, I just remember being so excited and watching him decline was very, very tough, but it was something that I just wanted him to know that we are good. 'Cause he would kind of be like almost like in regret, like, man, I wish we would have done this. I'm like, dad, I really don't care. Like, how about we just sit down and like try to talk about something else? And a lot of it was just he and I just sharing silence. 'Cause I think he was just in his head a lot, like replaying things. Mm-hmm. And I only know that because I'm from him.
Yeah.
It's funny. Like when you look at your pops and you can look at him, you're like, that's this. As you get older, you know, you're like, wait a minute. I look like that.
Yeah.
I can see that movement, mm-hmm. that tick, that stare, that glare, that, huh. Okay. So once I see it, then I accept it. Now I connect with it. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he was stubborn. He wanted to make sure that when he was getting ready to pass, that no one was there. And I remember seeing every time I would fly back and forth from Denver, Colorado to Seattle to go visit him, I would always tell him, obviously I love him, and I'll see you next time. I'll see you next week or next 2 weeks. And I remember this last time I was getting ready to fly to Cleveland, Ohio to go guest post. And I was like, hey, Pops, like I got to go work. But after I'm done, I got to go to Germany for FIBO. I'm going to come right back. So I'll see you in a couple weeks. Okay, Phil. Okay. And as I walk out, I was like, I don't know about this one. Hmm. And I looked back and I was like, nah, just get out of your head. Just go, you know, just leave. And
you felt it.
Lo and behold, like, yeah, you know, a week later, even less than a week later, he was gone after I was on stage at a show. And, you know, it sucked. It hurt, you know, it hurts for everyone in different ways. Mm-hmm. Some people get to stay by the bedside. I was on bodybuilding stage. Mm-hmm. When that happened, and I had to go do a meet and greet right after. And I'm glad I did it because he wanted me to do that.
You did the meet and greet.
Yeah.
In with the knowledge as well.
Yeah. I found out right after I got off stage.
You dedicated.
And I still had it. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. But he told me, I felt him. It was like, I'm good. Go to work. And even as I say it now, I'm like, that's exactly how I would be if I don't have children, but like I would tell my son, I'd be like, I'm gone, mm-hmm. but I'm with you. So when I hear those whispers from my father, mm-hmm. I don't say it's weird. I don't say it's strange. I just say, thank you. And I use it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So for anyone out there that like is feeling those vibes from someone that's passed on, oh man, there's so much more with you than they, I smile more now talking about my father mm-hmm. because of what he did stand for, the things that he did do, the memories that we did have. Wasn't a ton, but man, like what quality moments, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. like quality moments. And, yeah, dude, it's, I know I'm going to probably be a wreck next week.
Yeah.
But I will say every time I watch Breaking Olympia, I get emotional every time around
that bit.
A couple segments. Yeah, for sure. And it was tough, you know, like when we had our premiere a few days ago. So I was kind of looking around and I remember just grabbing, you know, I'm like, oh, relax, Phil. Like you're grabbing the armrest like pretty hard. Mm-hmm. And then Cherie touched my hand. And then when she got emotional, I was like, oh man. And I'm like, yeah, it's just, but how beautiful is it that, you know, you can, as a man, like you can be in a space where you feel comfortable to be emotional in that aspect, to not always have this hardened heart. It doesn't mean that you're a wimp or anything like that. It just means that you know how to feel things. And I think life is about feeling things. It's about seeing things. It's about doing things. It's about feeling things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You really explained that so well. And I think what's great is a bloke like yourself, who's a hulking physique, throughout that, just being vulnerable, letting out the demons and anything that you potentially have held back previously to that. And you clearly really grasp what it is to be a man. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Like, no, thanks.
Being a man is something that we're all on that fucking journey as young blokes, and you think holding it in is the answer, and obviously it isn't. And it is nice that you can still connect with them, and looking at, you know, your, what led you to success, in my opinion, is extreme dedication to a very regimented routine. Mm-hmm. And look, the fact that he was an army drill sergeant, it makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's in your blood to be that kind of character. So bodybuilding is a lot of things, right? You know, from the posing, the lifting, to the, you know, eating and everything else that you put yourself through. But what is it to you? What do you think it is to you, essentially, if you were to boil it down?
I just look at it as the emotional connection. The connection with the mind and the body. I have something in my mind that I want to do. Like I want to train. But then you have these eyes. And you have to look in the mirror. And then see like, okay, what do I want to improve on? This is my body. These are the machines that can help me sculpt these things. Okay, now that I've seen it, what's my ability to even do the exercise itself, and how does it feel?
You got to be very truthful with yourself.
Oh man, you can't be in delusion, that's for sure. Mm. Like a lot of people, you know.
Yeah.
And I've been very fortunate to train by myself predominantly throughout my entire career, where, you know, I'm always been my hardest critic, and I don't have like that entourage of like, yeah, Phil, you look fucking great. I beat a lot of guys that had a large entourage telling them how great they are. And I think sometimes training partners are awesome. Could I have lifted heavier with a training partner? Absolutely. But did I need someone to just, you know, be in my ear nonstop? No. Because I knew what I wanted. I wanted to be a champion. So yeah, I feel like bodybuilding is that extreme connection with self. Mm. You have to know who you are through pain. You have to know how disciplined you are through repetition, through consistency. How do you be consistent with your schedule, with your eating schedule? I mean, that was something I had to learn, you know, first off, like, how do you eat every 3 hours, man?
Mate, you must be great at doing things you don't really want to do.
Yeah. Like I didn't like it.
Yeah. You couldn't have.
Like I haven't eaten today. I've just had this coffee, and you know, back then I had, you know, it was a requirement. You know, being a basketball player, you don't really have to eat. Mm. You know, you can have Skittles and candy and, just play.
Yeah.
But
other sports don't understand. I think, don't think bodybuilding, of all the people I've interviewed, mate, I don't know if there's another sport that requires 24/7 dedication, down to how much you sleep, down to everything.
Yes.
It's insane.
They're like behind, in my opinion. And it's not to minimize what they do. It's just that it's just not a prerequisite for success. You could be naturally gifted in with your hands, you know, with your feet, you know, but you don't have to diet like how we do. And everything is so highly intentional on your physical performance. But yeah, the bodybuilding means, you know, a soulful connection with your body, where you can actually go through life and still be consistent. You have the ability to be accountable. A lot of people don't want to be accountable for their actions, but as a bodybuilder, you have to. No one can lift those weights for you. You have to give a damn about your success more than anyone else in the room. So I can't want you to win more than you want to win.
Which is kind of unhealthy a little bit in terms of like the narcissistic side of our personalities actually are a massive advantage in that.
Yeah.
So you in your prime must have been a version of you that maybe you don't look back on fondly as a human as much as what you are now, maybe. You might think you're a better human now, I assume.
Much better.
Yeah.
I love you, man. This is because I'm like, I mean, obviously you get it. Massive narcissist.
Well, my dad was a bodybuilder. Like, he's the biggest narcissist I know.
No, you, dude, like you are, like you're thinking, well, that shit don't matter. Like what this matters.
Yep. Everything comes second.
No, I don't really care.
Yeah.
And it's almost like I have to tell you something that I have to treat someone with like almost this callous view. Because this is about me, like, sorry but not sorry was like a big quote, you know, like over, sorry, not sorry, can't go to your baseball game. Like, sorry, not sorry, can't hang out with you. So, hey, sorry, not sorry, man, you're talking about shit on the phone that just, I don't really give a fuck. I got to go eat and I got to go train today, you know, and some of that stuff is important too. You got to protect your energy. But at the same time, I mean, man, like I do think about, you know, maybe.
Saying no is huge, isn't it?
Yeah, like, man. And then when you realize how you've treated certain situations, you then try to make up for it by being overly like happy-go-lucky. And then, so like these ebbs and flows. So you're very unstable.
You mean like compensating, trying to be overly nice?
Yeah, overly nice. And then you end up messing something up, you know, by doing that. Because you're not balancing. You're thinking you're balancing things. Really, you're just effing up twice by doing that. Like I made some really bad decisions, like as far as business is concerned, by overly being nice to someone that was a complete dick.
Yeah, been there.
You know, like, oh yeah, you know, I kind of treated this guy like shit. So, oh yeah, be my friend.
Yeah.
And really I should have been looking at this guy like, yeah, this is a guy that's trying to steal from me. And he does.
Fuck me.
So, you know what I mean?
Being there.
Yeah. So, you know, bodybuilding means a lot of different things, but one thing that you cannot do, you cannot be a rock star and a bodybuilder. You have to be fully committed, like wholeheartedly. My first competition as an amateur, I do this show, I win the show. And so you got to see those photos.
Bro, you are so gifted. And I know you called the gift, but like when I seen you, I was like, I've seen all these young bodybuilders. I remember looking at Dorian Yates when he started. I've looked to see like how genetically gifted are they? Because I was looking at myself when I was a young guy. I realized pretty quickly. I was like, oh no, this is different. You were a freak.
Yeah, thanks, dude. Yeah,
like it's insane what you looked like as a kid.
Yeah, you got to see the very first selfie of Bill Heath. That has never
that
been.
That blew my mind. That first picture. So I'm like, oh, how much had you been training then? Like,
dude, that was the first day.
Wow.
And it's so cool. I'll give myself some credit. I remember I've said this on interviews before. I started bodybuilding October 8th, 2002, blah, 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 blah. I took a picture. Da, da, da. I show you the freaking photo.
Man.
And when
all men people, are created equal, man. It's right, not fair.
When people, when we watched when we're at the premiere, it was like a gasp. And like people were like in the theater, like, whoa, because that was the shot. I remember being in the house. I was like, man, when are the guys going to leave? Because I was, even though I wasn't playing anymore, I was still living at the basketball house. So they were going off to practice. I was like, okay, I finally got this digital camera. I'm going to set it up right here, set the timer. I'm just going to, what do I do? I was like, shit, just take your shirt off. And I had my track pants still on. And I was like, okay, boom. And And I only took one picture. It was like, boom.
Wow.
And I was like, this is your start. And I didn't, and you know what's funny? I didn't look at it like, wow, you look great. Because I was obviously comparing myself to people that were already competing, that were already training for this. I was just a Division I basketball player, shortly removed from playing hoops. I played my last game. Oh yeah, that would have been 6 months, no, 7 months prior to that photo being taken. So I hadn't really begun the bodybuilding journey. I was just doing basketball workouts. In fact, I was still playing, you know, open gym and stuff like that. But that was the day I said, no more basketball at all. I'm only gonna do this bodybuilding stuff. And I took pictures every week. But then after I competed in that first contest and won, I did something I shouldn't. Well, I'm glad I did it because I learned a lesson. I went out partying that night, drinking, keg stands. I did a keg stand in my post.
Whoa.
And the next day, my teammates had told, you know, the coaching staff, hey, Phil did this bodybuilding show, man. He freaking won the whole fucking thing. Mm-hmm. So some of the assistant coaches came by and they're like, hey, Heath, like, what's going on? I was like, oh, nothing. They're like, yeah, congratulations. Hey, man, let me see. And I was like, uh-uh. They're like, come on, man, why not? And I was like, nah, man, I don't feel so well. They're like, oh, okay, no problem. The reason is because me not knowing that you can't be a rock star and a bodybuilder, I had gained all that weight of water.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was bloated in the face and, like, pudgy. I had, like, one ab, you know, I had, like, a pony keg. You know, I didn't know how to, you know, get rid of that fluid. And I learned, I was like, oh, so as a bodybuilder, even after the show is over, it's not like other sports where you can go drink beer and eat food and because you're starving, right? But you have to really have another method after the show. So such delayed gratification, like you have instant gratification, but then you have to still say, okay, I want to maintain something unachievable and then slowly get back to normal life. And that was really tough for me because I just wanted to eat, dude. I just wanted to be normal again. And I hadn't fully accepted it until I'd say after I did my first Arnold Classic in 2007, where I went out again as a pro. I was like, I got fit at my first Arnold Classic. I want to eat pasta. I want to do this. And next thing you know, I gained like 30 pounds just like in one day. And you know, that means bad things are coming. And it took me like a week and a half to get that water off by doing cardio, because you can't just do the cardio and get it off, right? Like, you may have to run diuretics just to get that down. Now you're playing with some things that you shouldn't be messing with.
Diuretics, dangerous.
Absolutely.
Just a little story. Obviously, my dad was a bodybuilder. He was rolling around with like Mr. Universe type guys.
Oh, man. And
Junior Mr. Universe was his best friend. He died using diuretics.
Yeah.
Because he drained himself to such a level. And so it's scary
stuff. Yeah. So, you know, I learned very early on, like, when you decide to be a bodybuilder, there's a lot of gray area and you can't dabble in that.
Yeah.
You got to be very conscious, and it really requires an ultimate level of discipline. Ultimate, like, nothing to minimize any other sport, but after a fighter is done, I've seen them. I've been to UFC fights. I've been to boxing matches. Like, they can eat, they can still hang out, they can have cake. Bodybuilders can too, but at some degree, they're going to have to really ignite. And everybody's different. That's what's crazy. A bikini chick is different from a, you know, women's physique competitor or figure competitor, or a men's physique is different from an open class guy. Some men's physique guy can kill over and die because he probably ran too many diuretics, right? So everybody has to be mindful of what they put in their body, how they adjust post show. But the bodybuilding stuff, man, it's always evolving. So you always have to be a student of yourself, and with new technology and with PEDs and all that stuff, like, you have to be very, very careful because people have died.
Yeah.
I mean, straight up, like, we already know. We all know someone, whether they were a pro or just a guy at the gym.
Yeah.
You know, that just took it too far and just didn't take their health seriously, didn't get their blood work done.
There was the insulin, obviously, that caused a lot of deaths as well, which is extremely dangerous. I know you've come out and said that you wouldn't have
never
used that. Yeah, but
I thought about it at one point, no lie.
Of course.
But then I had to, it was one of those things where I'm like, why?
Mm-hmm.
You're already, at that time, I was 5-time Mr. Olympia. So I was like, man, maybe I just try it. And then my trainer was like, you can grab it, but like, I advise against it. He's like, I know guys that did that and it worked, but maybe it only worked like one time. So then I started really researching. And I was like, when I say research, I'm thinking of like all the guys that I beat that I know that do it. And just to summarize, I mean, a lot of guys online will say like, oh, of course Phil Heath does it because everybody else does it. It's like, that's not the case because there's other things I didn't do either, you know, that plenty of people probably thought I did. But I think once they see like in Breaking Olympia, like the initial photos, they'll be like, oh, well, he probably didn't.
It's assumed, right? Like you did everything possible.
Right. I mean, I did everything possible on the recovery side as well. Like I did things that they didn't even know I was doing, like hyperbaric therapy, infrared saunas, like doing chiropractic 3 days a week, like all these different things. Grounding mats and, you know, the detoxes. I even did fucking colonics, dude.
Whoa.
I didn't want to do that. That was something that the wifey was like, you need to go to get that done. I'm like, oh my gosh, like I really don't want to do this.
Fuck.
And she's like, I want you to be around forever. I was like, that's a good argument, babe. Like, yeah, okay. But you know
with the PEDs, I felt like with the YouTube thing, as you mentioned, that there was like a wave of people, experts, coming out and giving all of these huge cycles.
Yeah.
And I wondered what it was like for you watching that happen, because you're obviously in the know.
Right.
And you're watching all of these basically morons telling people to just take as much as humanly possible. Do you think that's like one of the main basic mistakes that young bodybuilders make, is they just think more juice equals Mr. Olympia?
Correct. Yeah. I think majority of the people that are out there on vlogs should be damn near banned. Damn near, because I believe in free speech, but I say damn near because
it's dangerous advice.
It's so dangerous, like, and to sensationalize it. I mean, we got people under the age of 25 that are clearly doing these things and making money from it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
These are teenagers.
Teenagers shouldn't even be touching steroids, right? Like,
and this is like, I had a conversation the other day. I was at an event and some of these kids were like, Yeah, there's no problem with it. Like, you did it. And I go, yeah, but huh? You're like, how old are you? Well, I'm 19. He's 17. He's 20. And I go, why would you do that? Well, this guy's doing it. This guy. And I go, you realize that sounds like drugs, right? Like, just like, well, he's smoking pot. Mm-hmm. He's doing coke. Like, what's the problem? The problem is that with bodybuilders, especially the youth, even if you're 25 and you just started training, you didn't even give yourself an opportunity to learn how to train. You said this at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't even give yourself an opportunity to even know if you even like bodybuilding. You immediately said, I'm going to do these steroids and it's just going to work out. You don't know how to train. You don't know how to diet. You really don't know how to competition prep. You're getting advice from some dude at a gym. You're probably not getting prescribed medications also.
And you've got good natural testosterone at that age anyway.
And they have no, I challenge, and I say this at events to young kids.
Yeah.
I say, you haven't even gotten your blood work done, huh? And they go, you know how ignorant you are?
Mm-hmm.
You know how stupid, this is stupid. I don't want to call you stupid. This is stupid. This is reckless.
Yeah.
I get my blood work all the time, every 3-4 months,
mm-hmm.
because I need to know that data. And if you're 20 years old, you're going to sit here and tell me, I'm a 44-year-old man, you're going to tell me that your testosterone is low? Come on. Like, and you don't even know your blood work. You also need to know not just your testosterone, but you need to know your testosterone free. You need to know the total. You need to know your hematocrit, your hemoglobin. You need to know your A1C. You need to know your creatinine levels. You need to know all these things. You know, your AST, ALT. You know, you need to know all these things, because you could be doing something that is highly detrimental to your body, to your organs, and then you'll be the guy that ruins it for all of us because you decided to, you know, take all these jabs and of gear and stuff, and then you become an idiot and then kill over and die. Like, you shouldn't be doing this. And a lot of time I feel like we're in the age where majority of the people who we follow online regarding gear don't even compete.
I feel like Rich Piana was the biggest name in the world for that.
Good. He was a nice guy to me, but at the same time, I feel like...
I say was because for those who don't know,
He also dabbled in party drugs too.
Yep.
So I don't think people realize, like, it can open up a whole other world too, a whole other portal of things. And I can only imagine what it is to be an influencer that doesn't compete, has no interest, because they know deep down, like, why should I compete? Like, I can just go do some gear and actually look swole and then filter my images or have it filmed a certain way and gain a bunch of followers. And next thing I know, I get a bunch of sponsors. And yeah, man, I'm just like Phil Heath, man. Like, I got more followers than him and I can do this. You know what I'm saying? So, like, we live in this society where an algorithm can make you famous. For what?
What do you make of that new young lad? I forgot his name. You know, you might have seen him. He's got the long, curly hair. And
Sam.
Yeah, what do you make of that situation? Because he's a very young man and he's running a lot of juice, clearly.
I mean, I have no idea what the cycle is, right? But I can say this. I mean, I met him. He was a nice guy. Mm-hmm. I feel like he has an interest to compete. He went to Dino's gym, which was interesting because he was... put through the pace as far as posing is concerned, he got a fucking wake up call. And I'm glad he did because I feel like he is now at a point where if he really wants to compete, he's got to make that look effortless now. So it can't just be like, okay, I film content and this and that. And then
for those who don't know, sorry, posing is very difficult because you're holding these poses for long periods of time.
Yeah.
That's why when you're on stage, you're blowing out your ass and it's hard. It's my dad actually was really good at that. He taught me a lot about that.
Yeah. So it's not easy because you're flexing things that it's not just your biceps. It's everything. And people are looking at everything.
Every detail.
And yeah, picture, you know, is only a fragment of a second, right? Whereas the video, you're like, man, this guy held that pose for 10 seconds and then did the other one for 12 and then the other one for 10.
Stamina required, really, isn't it?
100%.
For a big dude to have that level of stamina, it's really conflicting, right? Because you're supposed to have a lot of stamina. You're explosive.
Right. So my thing with Sam is I haven't sat down with him to figure out exactly what the game plan is. I don't know his coach that well. I just don't know the strategy. But what I will say is it's very interesting to see someone as sensational as this guy is and have the following he has, but I don't know if there's educational content as to how he got there. So I feel like there's an element missed because if there is drugs involved and you're not explaining it to the next person that adores you, I get there's a double-edged sword with this. Like if you say, oh yeah, I'm on test and I'm on this, I'm on that. Well, we all know you're committing a felony.
Yeah.
Because it's illegal. And that's the other part. The minute you admit it, well, people can say, well, you're a cheat, but then everybody knows you're doing it, but then you're being disingenuous.
It's a fucking hard situation.
So it's hard, right? Mm. You know, it's not calling him a bad person. It's just like, but let's be clear. Like, the person that follows not just him, but people that look like him that are under the age of 30 or even 25. I can't remember. How old is he?
20. He's a young guy, 20s, early 20s.
So it'd be interesting. Like if I had him on here, I'd be like, so when did you start? Because I'm curious too. Because how does that resonate with a 14-year-old, a 15-year-old? They may look at him and say, well, I don't care about competing because, oh, that takes a lot of work. Yeah, it takes a lot of years. So we all have our own lane in this space, and I feel like we can all, you know, make a living from it and whatnot, but I think it's how you do it.
What, in terms of the guys who you worked out with, was there ever any cycles that you got wind of where you were like,
oh yeah, like, I've heard some like, and from like extremely reliable. Yeah. Oh yeah. Like,
what was the craziest one that you were like, wow, I can't believe that guy.
Oh yeah. I can't say who, but like 5 grams a test. And then like off season.
Per what? Per week?
Yeah. I've known some guys that do 3 plus like all these, you know, it's funny, like all these other type of compounds that I wouldn't even know. Like, I'm like, what's Increlex? Like, I don't know what the fuck that is. Like all these different types of insulins, all these different types of tests. Mm-hmm. Then you got DECA, you have EQ, then you have Trend, then you, and I'm like, dude, like Trend. All right. You guys are like, how do you not cough your lungs out, like that shit. I'd taken that and got the Trend cough and you're like, I'm dying. You know, like you're like,
I've seen people talk like, about,
I don't not want that in my body anymore. Mm-hmm. Like that shit is crazy. But yeah, I've heard like over 10 grams of oils in a week. I've heard these stories and what's crazy to me is do what you want. But did you win? This is my issue with it. Like, okay, it's your body, it's your life, right? But you took these compounds to win. And then when you didn't, did you become delusional and say, well, Ronnie Coleman's doing this. It must be something else that they're doing more, or Phil Heath, dude, like I didn't weigh 300 pounds.
That's what I loved about seeing your first picture, because it blows away, just like many of the other first pictures of Mr. Olympias, this idea that you were a skinny kid who had no muscle, who turned into Mr. Olympia. No, you had the genetics, you did the training. And then of course you add in what you need to later, but like, It's an illusion that people have, this delusion of, if I just take all of this shit, I'm going to be this guy. And that's just not how it works, right?
Well, now we're seeing, if you notice, we're seeing a lot of guys, because the barrier of entry in the world of fitness online is very low, very low. The barrier of entry to be a track star is pretty high, because you got to be fast, you got to be able to jump. The barrier of entry of being a basketball player is pretty high, because you can't just go into a basketball gym and say, hey, I got next, and then get picked up and now you're like a pro. Mm-hmm. Bodybuilding is probably the only sport where, because of PEDs, there are people that don't have the genetics but can take things and abuse them and actually look pretty damn good online.
And the synthol and stuff like
right.
that, which people can inflate their muscles with.
Right. And if it's not on video, they can kind of position themselves a certain way without even Photoshopping, right? And then you have that part. Mm-hmm. You can't Photoshop a slam dunk. You know what I mean? Like, you can't Photoshop like a guy jumper from the free throw line. Like, I guess you could, but like, you could figure that out pretty quick. Yeah. But you could Photoshop or do this or do that. But like, you can't take a bottle of test and go dunk a basketball next week. It takes a lot of work to even, touch the net and then touch the backboard and touch the rim.
You were dunking a 5'9", mate. I was impressed with that.
Well, I'm glad they were able to show in Breaking Olympia me dunking that basketball. Yeah. I was 235 pounds in that photo.
Bro.
That was after I did the Junior Nationals. So I did the Junior Nationals in 2005, right? I won the overall. I get a call from the late Peter McGuff. He says, hey, we're going to fly you from Chicago to L.A. We want to bring you in for a photo shoot with Joe Weider, all that stuff. They said, bring basketball shorts and some shoes. It's like, okay. I always have basketball shorts and some shoes. So I do that. I go to the Chatsworth Powerhouse Gym near the Woodland Hills, former Weider headquarters, right? I meet with Robert Reif and Peter McGuff. They're like, hey, we're going to take some photos showcasing like, you being a former basketball player, and so we're on a basketball court. So they deflated the basketball. They say, Phil, we want you to like crush the basketball, and then you're going to hit some poses with the basketball in one hand and have a dumbbell in the other hand. We're doing all these cool poses. And then they say, okay, can you give him a basketball, please? Yep. Okay, Phil, now go dunk it. He said, excuse me? They're like, yeah, you could dunk your basketball. Go dunk it. And I was like, I can shoot it. They're like, No, you could try it. I said, give me 5 minutes. So now I'm like stretching. I'm like, shit. In my head, I'm like, okay, you haven't dunked a basketball in a while, but then again, I mean, it's been, 2.5-3 years since you really, really done that. Let's just seize this moment right now. Like, what if it does work? If it don't work, it don't work, but like, if it does, it's going to be killer. So I told Peter McGuff, I said, I'm going to pass the ball to you and I want you to bounce it right here. I'm going to grab it, cut, and I'm going to dunk this thing. He said, okay. So it's just like if I was doing a layup line and he does it and I just go, I dunk it. First try, dunk it. Robert Reif says, okay, now do it again.
You've just given me everything in this one shot, and now you're saying, do it again.
Now twist your body. Now take your tongue out like Jordan. Do this, do that. But don't, because I'm thinking, I just want to dunk the ball. Like here's the basket. I want to dunk it right here or right here. He wanted me to come from the other side, which is kind of hard, because I'm not a 1 foot jumper. I'm a 2 foot jumper. And being 180 pounds, dunking a basketball, it's much different with 235 It's 50
Bro,
more
it's
pounds.
Insane, man. It's not even human.
And I just got done competing, so I'm already depleted. You know what I mean? I'm depleted, but then I've rebounded because I competed at 210.
Mm.
So now I done gained 25 pounds. But I did it, man. And I'm so glad that we captured that, because that same photograph was in my first cover of Flex magazine as a fold out poster.
Yeah. So sick.
It was killer, man. So I'm shout out to Robert Reef, man. Like, you know, in the late Peter McGuff, because they pushed my ass to do that. And I'm glad I was able to, because technically no other bodybuilder in the history of our sport has ever had that moment.
No way.
No, you can't find it anywhere. Like, I did it, and I got that that cover shot the night I turned pro at winning the Mr. USA that following month.
All right. Unfortunately, we can't go too much longer because Phil has a busy schedule today. So I've got a couple of little questions left. What would your friends say is your best quality?
I'm too nice.
Oh, really?
My best friends know I'm too nice.
Yeah. But you're very generous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair. That's a nice one. What about your work? What do you think is your worst quality?
Then I'm too nice.
I like that.
I'm too trustworthy. I trust too quick.
Yeah.
Because I want everybody to win. And it's like I didn't grow up with any brothers or sisters. So I want, I just want that. I just want everybody to be happy.
Here's everyone.
Yeah. People pleasing. Yeah.
My final question is always the same. I like to ask this everyone. How would you like to be remembered?
As a man who truly lived up to his potential and decided that ain't good enough. Because he always wanted more, but he also wanted more from everyone else around him.
Yeah, I felt that. Yeah. I felt that from everything I watched. Mate, I really wish we could do longer. Phil he's only in the UK for a short time, but I'm really grateful for this time, mate. It meant a lot to us. That's Phil Heath. The documentary is out soon. Breaking Olympia. What a documentary. I'll put the links to everything in the description below. We'll see you on the next one. Cheers.